This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
What's up, taters? A word about today's episode. The conversation you're about to hear is a rewatch, a Sex and the City rewatch with comedian and actor Matt Bronger. He's super funny. We were super stoked to have him on the episode. The note is, the word about today's episode is that my audio is a little sketchy. It's not bad, and we did a lot of work on it, and it sounds good. I don't know if it sounds good. Otherwise, I wouldn't be giving you this note. It sounds a little bit rough, but it's definitely listenable. We had some microphone problems, and you know what? To our listeners, we apologize to you. The good thing is, we did a lot of work on it. It's not going to sound like the pristine Bradshaw Boys quality that you are used to, but, you know, listening to it, it sounds like a conversation between two people, and it's really funny. Matt is a comedian, actor, like I said, and he tells some great stories of being on set with Kyle MacLachlan and John Corbett. We watch Sex in the Country, which is a classic Sex in the City episode, and we just have a really great conversation. But we want to give you a note that it's, like I said, it's not the quality that you're used to, but the good news is we've had our microphones. We had them fixed. We actually got new microphones, and we were able to do all that through our Patreon for the people that are patrons. And so we want to say thank you to our patrons. And if you are interested in becoming a patron, head over to patreon.com/thebradshawboys. We're doing a lot of great, fun episodes there. We're doing rom-coms. We just went on a Sex and the City bus tour in New York with On Location Tours. We're going to put up a video of that pretty soon. And Kevin and Katie started their own sub podcast over there called The Pink Ladies that you may have heard here. They're covering musicals. There's just a lot of great stuff that, you know, they did The Pink Ladies because I was talking about how I didn't like Grease. And then I went out of town. I came back and they started a whole other podcast. And you know what I got to say? I'm glad they did because it's good. Anyway, all that to say, a lot of fun stuff on the Patreon. And we would love to have you over there. So like I said, it's starts at $5 a month. You get tons of extra episodes, and it's patreon.com/thebradshawboys. And it always sounds good. It's Patreon. All that said, this episode, this conversation is fantastic. It doesn't take away from how funny Matt is, and it doesn't take away from the great conversation we have about Sex and the City. So, enjoy. We just want to give that a little note, and, enjoy the episode, taters.
You're now listening to Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three relatively grown men binge the iconic HBO series Sex and the City. So dust off those DVDs and grab yourself a white wine or even a cosmopolitan and settle in. Take it away, boys.
Welcome to the Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three guys are watching and rewatching Sex and the City. I'm Corey Cavan, and today we're having an intimate chat with a comedian. It's just going to be me and him. Please welcome comedian, writer, and now Sex and the City watcher, Matt Bronger.
Hey, Corey, how are you? I love the hook. I love a podcast with a good hook.
Is it
good?
Yeah. You know, I feel like in everything I've done in comedy, there needs to be a hook, because otherwise I'm just a guy or a group of guys.
Yes, yes.
And there's so many podcasts where there's just groups of guys like you and I just talking. And
yes. And they need to be destroyed.
Yeah, exactly.
give us individuals something to talk about.
Like, yeah.
Some rando thing. And this is a great angle in that, you know, this episode, you know, it's just two dudes talking about Sex and the City who you wouldn't ordinarily think would watch it. But it's like, I watched that episode a long time ago.
Oh, really?
I know we're going to go off and watch it now, but like, I already seen it. Like, but it's been so long. It was like 2001, I think.
It's yeah, I think that's when so the show started in 98, goes through 2004, and I think this is episode or season four that we're in. So yeah, I think it's around 2001 for sure.
Wow.
Well, that brings up an interesting thing. So you're in Los Angeles, but you were in New York for a long time as a New York comedian.
Well, no, I was there. I was in Chicago. I was in New York for college, so I was there for
Okay.
4 years, but not in the city.
Okay.
Then I moved to Chicago, and then been back to New York plenty, but I've never lived in New York City proper.
Interesting. So, because I was going to ask your relationship with the show. You said you'd watch Sex and the City back in the day at some point. What's your relationship with the show? And then I guess the other question would be like, how's that influence any relationship with New York?
Well, from the get-go, it started when I was in Chicago into when I first moved to LA. So I didn't have any direct correlation with New York then, but it was watching that show. It was always, it's like, hate to say it, but it's like, it was a show for girls and gay men, so I didn't see it a lot, but my girlfriend loved it. And it's one of those things you'd watch kind of like, oh, begrudgingly, but you're like, everyone in that show is great. The writing's good. It's fun. It's cute. It's definitely like these half hour bites of comfort, but it's also complete and utter fantasy. Like
Yeah.
Carrie Bradshaw could never afford that apartment doing whatever her job is. Like it's even, they don't even get into like somehow she's such a huge blogger that she
Yeah.
has all these followers. It's like she just writes for a magazine or something, and
She writes for like a newspaper,
yeah,
yeah.
newspaper, and it's like, where am I going next? And it's just all of her articles are questions. Is he the one? Am I the one? Am I my him?
Yeah.
Thank you. I'll take $10,000. But it's like, so what? It's like kind of like a superhero movie. It
Yeah.
doesn't make sense, but it's fun. Who cares?
Yeah.
But I remember why it was like a side of New York. When I was in college, I didn't live in the city, but I went into the city a lot. And it had no correlation with any New York I knew. I
Yeah.
was hanging out in Lower East Side, drinking 40 ounces on a loading dock and smoking blunts and walking the streets and, just kind of just going to music shows and going to clubs and hanging out in St. Mark's Place
Yeah.
before it, which is now like a mall,
Yeah.
basically. But it just there that entire show is basically uptown. It's
Yeah.
all the Upper West Side, Upper East Side,
Yeah.
and so it was like it was kind of cool to see like a part of New York I never would never I never went to, and I didn't know any of that life. But it's a really fun fantasy, that show.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good point because I think that like their version of downtown New York is like Velvet Rope Soho Club.
Meatpacking District, 100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Totally.
Meatpacking District, which I remember some of that, but it was like I never went to any of those clubs because I was just I've never ever been that guy. I've never been that guy who goes goes to hook up and has all this money to spend on cocktails for people.
Yeah.
I can date and hit on people in a dive bar. I've
Yeah.
always been good at that, but at least back in the day, I was okay. But like just that strata of social interaction, I've never known. Not
Well,
really.
and so with you being a stand-up comedian, like I think that there are probably no stand-up comedians who live in that world. And if they are, it's like a stand-up who has suddenly gone into the upper echelon of like they're hanging out, like their friends are
Right.
now A-list actors, but there's
Right.
no one like from the world that I've been in comedy. I'm assuming the world you've been in comedy, comedy clubs, improv clubs, bar shows, that
Yeah.
is not the world of Velvet Rope, Meatpacking District,
No.
models, people that are somehow making $10,000 off their newspaper every month. Like there's
Right.
none of that happening at all.
No. The only comic that would come to mind from that era that would kind of fit into that, be a puzzle piece in that puzzle, would be like, say, Dane Cook
That is
or
exactly
his
what I was
son.
thinking.
You know what I mean? Who doesn't drink?
Yeah.
So it. And they routinely on that show, it's kind of like if you don't drink, it's like, what?
Well, later in season six, I think Samantha's boyfriend is this guy Smith Jarrett, and he's sober, and it's like a joke. When people meet him, they're like, Oh, wow, you young kids, you're really changing. You don't drink, huh? And it's such a thing that is completely foreign to everyone.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I remember a episode of like Will and Grace where Megan Mullally, is that her
Megan
name?
Mullally,
Yeah, her character who always had a martini, she meets this perfect guy and they agree on literally everything. And they're like, "Oh my God, where have you been all my life?" And she's like, "Let's have a drink." And he goes, "Oh, I don't drink." And she's like, "Bye." And the credits. You know,
Dude.
that was, you know, that culture of, I mean, there have been so many articles written about the casual alcoholism of not only Sex in the City, but people living in New York that way. I did a
Absolutely.
mental health podcast the other day, and with this comic who was named Danny, who was the social media director for Caroline's, and he became a stand-up, and he's a real good dude. And he was talking about he's been sober like 3 years, and I was like, "That's I give you a lot of credit because I feel like New York." I won't say who where the hardest place to be sober is, but the New York to me would be the hardest because you almost never drive. There are ample opportunities, and the culture of heavy drinking, to me, it feels almost more ingrained there than even Chicago or Boston in its own
Totally.
weird way, you know? And I don't mean just, you know, I feel like alcohol at every event, that's definitely Boston, that's definitely Chicago, but the culture of fuck it, let's get wasted, to me is at least in my memory has been so New York.
Well,
Where?
you can see that from someone who's lived in New York for a pretty long time now. You can see that when your friends who don't live here come to visit
Yeah,
and they're just like, we are
that would be me.
throwing in the towel.
That would be me.
Because yeah, we don't have to drive, we can hop in an Uber, and even like Uber culture is kind of everywhere now.
Yep.
Like, and I know that's changed Los Angeles, but it's still different. Like my friends that live in LA are like, yeah, we kind of start making dinner and kind of turn not like going to bed, but like the night is slowing down around 7 or 8, and like we're having like a chill night home. We're having friends over. We're making some dinner, you know, even if things are getting a little rowdy. I think the difference in New York, and I forgot who first told me this, but they had described it as like Mario Brothers, where you can go down a pipe and then pop up in another place. And like the subway and cabs and social events are like, you can routinely, I worked a job yesterday. I came home after that. Actually, I worked a job. I finished. I went and saw a movie in the Lower East Side. I came home to Brooklyn. I went back out and texted a bunch of people and their random coworker who we meet to get coffee. It was like, let's go get dinner at this restaurant. And then like had a couple of drinks and then stayed late with the restaurant staff. And like that could be any night. There's routinely nights where it's like you start at one place and it's a 5-location night. And that doesn't happen in a lot of other places.
No, and you know, I really can't think of any offhand where that is optionable. You know, it is truly the city that never sleeps. There are bars that don't close. You know, and the only city I can think of beside it would be New Orleans.
Yeah, absolutely.
That as being an option. So my point is not, oh, New York is bad for you. No. Each and every one of us are as good and as bad for ourselves as we let ourselves be. So I
Yeah.
have friends who live there who have excellent control. I have friends who didn't have as strong control, and I'm glad they don't live there anymore.
Yeah, totally.
I always wondered how bad it would be for me, and probably pretty bad. I do really enjoy a drink. You know, definitely have slowed down, let myself to still indulge at times, but kind of. I mean, when you said that people coming from out of town, that definitely is me, where I'm like, oh man, I love going hopping from show to show and having like a beer at each show, you know? But you know, I just made sure that's not 9 shows.
Exactly.
You know, it's just, but it is like the place where people go and they kick off their shoes because
Yeah.
it's intoxicating. There's no place in the world like it, and I've been all over the world. It's the heavyweight champion of cities.
Yeah, that's such a good way of putting it.
And one of those the things about this show is that these women are keeping each other not only mentally healthy but sane, because it is a lot. New York is not, if nothing else, it's a lot.
Yeah, That's true. I think that I've always told people, like, the amount of things that can happen to you in a day here will happen in about a year in another place. And it's just, there's even this morning, I'm like, I woke up, I went to a coffee shop, I saw a Fiero, if you know that car. Like, I
Of
saw a
course.
Fiero that was like painted like a trapper keeper. I ran into a guy I haven't seen in years, who saw him on the subway. We did the like, oh, and then he had to get off. And then I got off, and then there were some guys who were super strung out in front of me that I had to like walk around and had a weird interaction with. And like, that was all before 10 a.m. So it's like, it's just that. Well, okay, so speaking of going to multiple comedy shows, you have a new, you've had multiple comedy albums, but you have a newer comedy special that is out now, called Doug. And tell us about that.
Well, it's named after a terrible guy my wife and I met on vacation once, and that's the final story. And it has this big kind of magic trick like reveal at the very end that I spent close to a year doing on the road as my closer. And after every weekend or big show, I would have to kind of do detective work online and see if anyone had posted the video, like filmed me doing it, and then I would send them DMs, be like, hey, can you take this down? So now I'm glad that it's out. I don't do that joke anymore, but it's kind of like this, is this big thing that, it would give it away, and it involves, a random audience member kind of thing. Like I said, like it's like a magic trick, but it basically breaks down where I'm at in my life, having a kid during the pandemic, driving 3,300 miles across the country with a 6-week-old. During an electric year in an electric car with California plates. Highly recommend.
Wow.
Yeah, just but meeting all kinds of people, but it's very positive. I mean, I wanted the special to be kind of like a vacation for people, like, oh, let's get our friends together, have a couple drinks, and let's get this thing on pay-per-view, because it's like that's how I did it when I was a kid, where it was just like, oh, what you call event watching. Typically it's like a big fight, like UFC or boxing or whatever. But now we're moving into kind of the very strong DIY era, where I have a partner with this thing, but I own it. I own the whole special, and so I'm just putting it on. You can rent it. Whether or not it'll go on a free platform, we'll see. Not for now. But it's like, it's not a gold rush on my part. But it's like my last special, I sold to Amazon Prime and it covered all the costs, and that's great. But it kind of got buried, because that's what I always say, like the most ironically named thing we have right now is a comedy special, because they're not special. There are billions. It's a wall of faces. And how do you choose one? And I'm just like, well, let me take mine out to this field and see if anyone wants to watch it. Come to the field. It's a couple bucks, And this is not me making a ton of money. I mean, I had it initially on a thing called Moment, where you basically get to have it for like a 2-week period, and that's it. So a lot of bands use that for live events. I've done stuff on Moment where it's like I'm doing a podcast with somebody kind of thing, and it was great, because it made it that kind of event thing to come to do it. And Andrew Schultz had done his special on Moment and made like over $5 million, which to me is absolutely hilarious. It's not only good for comedy, it's just so funny how that guy has picked the lock on all things getting his voice out and stuff. I can't do what he does, and I don't want to do what he does, but it's like, he's doing that. Let me try it, and let me also try this video on demand thing. So anyway, it's a special I'm really proud of and happy about. And the album streaming on all the platforms that are still allowing comedy streaming, what with the lawsuits, but it's out there.
In the age of having everything available to us, the things that I end up enjoying more a lot of times are the things that I pay for. Like if I like there's so many there's movies that I'll look up and I'll be like, oh, it's only available if I rent it. And then when I rent it, I'm like, all right, now I have this amount of time to watch this thing. I actually focus in more, because I've paid for it. So I think there's definitely something to be said about the choice of doing that. I also think what's really cool is the choice of, I love comedy specials. I love comedy. I've, done comedy, but I think that there is something really cool about this is a thing that you worked on and it has a special thing that you had to, not only that you had to craft, but you had to kind of craft and then hide from the world. Yeah. And like in the Instagram era where there's a reveal where you're like, I had to work to kind of hold this away so that I could then put it out. And then this is the only time that it'll happen and it'll go away. Like, you're like, I did this for this special. It's like a movie premiere where it's like, they're shooting something. We don't know what it's going to be. And then it gets premiered and you're like, oh, that was what was happening this whole time. It's the whole reason to go see something live, I think.
Yeah. And exactly. And I think, you know, interestingly enough, being a stand-up comedian is kind of like you're a part of what I believe will be the last bastion of entertainment, because once AI has locked in on everything, you know, it's going to be, people are going to be able to hold their phones. And I mean, I do this, I'm basically doing part of a bit I do on stage but someone will be like, yeah, I want Game of Thrones 5 seasons, but it's only the cast of Friends, go. And like, it'll be able to algorithm that up for you. And it'll, you know, I don't know if it'll be within my cognitive lifetime that it looks as good as how you and me talk, or as real as you and me talking right now. But the thing about it is it's generated, and it's not something that human hearts and minds actually made. And tech people will argue with me and say that it's just as valid. I will disagree until I die. The thing about live is that it is high stakes. It's terrifying. You don't know what's going to happen, and it's immediate, and then it's over, just like life. So, you know, that's the thing about why I still love seeing stand-up, why I still love doing stand-up, is the risk, is the fact that, you know, and the shared experience of, hey, it's you and me, we'll see how this goes. So, yeah, you know. Oh, you got muted, man. I don't know what happened.
I did get muted. Wow. See, listen.
Was that Elon? Did Elon come in and just mute you? I think he.
You know, that was. I think that was a test to show how great live things are. You know, you get mistakes.
Yes.
That wouldn't happen with an AI. AI would definitely not get muted.
This is where you scream at your producer to leave it in.
Exactly.
Leave it in.
Leave it in. Well, let's go watch season 4, ep 9, Sex in the Country, and we will be right back.
Episode 57, Sex and the Country. Carrie is dragged to Aiden's country home in Suffern, New York. Charlotte visits the McDougal compound in Connecticut. Miranda yells at Steve when he tells her he has testicular cancer, but that he has no clue about his condition. Samantha gets annoyed when her dates keep asking her what she's doing next weekend. And now, back to the boys.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. And we're back. Sex and the Country. I'm glad that we picked this one, because I feel like it's two guys. So we did an episode with Kurt Brownholer, who I know you know as a comedian.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the one that we picked for Kurt unknowingly was the episode that is essentially known as the abortion episode in the series.
Right, I remember that one.
And as we came back from watching it, he was like, guys, why did we pick this one? And you know, we soldiered through, and I think that, you know, we handled it well. But I like that this one, This one, there's a couple other differences in this where there's some guy things to talk about. Sure. We've got Carrie's manly boyfriend up in we got Aiden up in his mountain house. So I'll run us down real quick of the story points, and then we can kind of just like dive in. So at this point of the show, Carrie and Aiden are together. They are trying to kind of push the relationship forward. And Aiden has a mountain house upstate in Suffern, New York. There's some jokes about you're going to be suffering and suffering. Classic good Sex and City pun jokes right there.
Sure.
Yeah. And Carrie and Aiden are doing that. Charlotte and Trey are trying to get pregnant. Charlotte ends up visiting the Bunny McDougal, the McDougal compound in Connecticut, and lots of more stuff with just Bunny, Trey's mom, who like he clearly has mom issues. Also, Kyle MacLachlan's like such an amazing actor. And then we have Miranda and Steve. Steve has testicular cancer. That comes out. They're broken up. He has testicular cancer. He's like, it's no big deal. And Miranda is like, it is a big deal. You need to like get a doctor. And basically, like she kind of moms him in like a great friend way.
Well, and she womans him, because like that's the thing with men. That's how we kill ourselves, is we neglect ourselves and we go, it's fine, because we're societally taught a man doesn't cry, a man doesn't complain, and we take that lazily as a man never gets checked, a man soldiers on, a man dies needlessly of cancer, you know.
totally, because it's just like, you know, this is my lot in life. I'll just go. There's a movie, I forgot what it is, but it's got Michael Shannon in it, and he's playing this I'll remember the name later, but it's like he's playing this sheriff in Texas who finds out he has lung cancer, and he's sitting there eating lunch with Jake Gyllenhaal, and Jake Gyllenhaal's like, aren't you gonna go to the doctor? And he was just like, no, this is the deal. I'm just gonna die now, and it's so perfect, and it's so needless, because it's
my mom sent me this. I think it was a New Yorker thing, and it was famous authors finish the why did the chicken cross the road joke, you know, and I don't remember any of them, but Hemingway's was to die period in the rain period. Such a man. Just stark and brutal, and yeah, that's funny. And I guess Michael Shannon, the most intense man of all time.
Absolutely.
Of course, he's gonna die.
Yeah, he's not gonna go on a spiritual journey and realize his life matters. Yeah.
Really, you're making it the deal.
Yeah, exactly. And other thing is, Samantha keeps dating these guys who are always like, "You're amazing. What are you doing next weekend?" And she's like, "What do you mean next weekend? We're here now."
I am a married man with a daughter, and I'm not sleeping with any of my wife. And I don't say that to anyone. I don't say that to my wife. You know, I mean, I don't, you know, we have vague plans, but it's like, I would never hang out with any of my good and best friends and be like, that was fun. What are we doing next week? Like that to me was the most unbelievable part of the thing, but of the episode. But at the same time, I'm sure it was based on something real. It's vague enough.
Well, probably. So the thing about the show that they've said is that it all the storylines had to either come from something one of the writers had experienced, or it's a jumping off point where someone's like, you know, I dated this guy and this happened, and then they would kind of riff it. So yeah, it definitely came from something real, for sure.
It's unbelievable to me, but it's like, who am I? You know, like I get it. I think
right. Yeah, really totally. Cool. Yeah. And then Samantha then ends up going up to Suffern as well, and meeting Farmer Luke, the guy who I think they said was like a hedge fund guy who then just moved his life up there and became to live off the land and have a cow. Yeah.
And you know, that the archetype of the guy wearing just overalls.
Overalls.
In its defense, I've seen every male body type in that. Look, I've seen super fat, super skinny. I've seen this guy, you know, very attractive dude, healthy body. I've seen those, you know, the Jethro where the shoulders are cartoonishly large, you know. But I've always thought the same thing about that, which is that looks so fucking uncomfortable. Like that looks so like I want to buy them a t-shirt every time. And not because I don't want to look at their chest. I don't care. But it's just the chafing of the suspenders and the raw inner denim on your stomach and nipples. It's just like, ouch, dude.
There's a whole thing that I'm guessing that you've seen. It's definitely big in like Bushwick in New York. There's like Carhartt is back in a lot of ways. And I've seen guys in the summer in Carhartt overalls with no shirt. And Carhartt is the roughest fabric. Like you're definitely looking to get chafed and walk away with some marks from that for sure.
That's right. Carhartt does make some. I had a bomber jacket. I actually sold it at a garage sale that was by Carhartt that was like really soft and nice because they also have their kind of, you know, line for, you know, stuff that actually fits you to your body and isn't just a fucking tent kind of thing. But yeah, totally. the just to straight up Carhartt and Dickies off the shelf, you know, at Lowe's.
Yes.
It feels terrible on the skin.
Absolutely. It's definitely, it's when you realize, like when you go to like Gap or H&M and you're like, when they made these clothes, they ran them through a washer like 40 times, but Carhartt, they're straight out of the mill.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's funny you say those areas where you still have younger dudes. And I definitely did that. I would wear, I think I had a Carhartt coat. I think I had a Scully. But it's kind of this whole what I kind of call Epcot working man or Epcot tough guy. It's just like, listen, the guys who are actually working construction or on a farm, they have a sweatshirt under that thing.
Absolutely.
But it's not an affectation. It's just something that's keeping them warm. It's not going to rip when they brush against heavy machinery. The hardest thing you're going to brush against is a polished oak bar top.
Totally. Well, that actually kind of brings me to think about like, so Aiden, you know, he's a furniture maker by trade and he has this house upstate, which like, this has changed since I've been in New York. Upstate was at this time in Sex and the City, like, I feel like upstate has become way more trendy in the past like 5 to 10 years. Dude. I was today in that coffee shop this morning hearing a guy talk about Soho House and like all these places to hang out. And in the same breath, he was like, and you know, the Catskills and upstate and like it's become this thing. But I feel like it was different in the early 2000s. I think it was
nobody did that. It was like that it's a fundamental tenet of the plot of this episode is why are you going out there? That's where people die. You know, it's the woods that, you know, she gets freaked out by a squirrel. And I also was like, I kind of did hate how Aiden had been feeding this giant squirrel. Cause squirrels are not friendly, good animals or whatever. You know, they're just, it's just going to come in your house and eat shit and run and shit everywhere. And he's like, I've been making friends with this squirrel, where it's kind of like, hey, stop. But yeah, I did a gig a couple months ago in Woodstock, and the really incredible town. But you can tell there's a real right now. There's actually a war going on between people who've been there a long time and people who are just looking to develop, and that's partially because of the pandemic, where people are like, I just want a land. I want land and air and space, but also because of the climate crisis. You know, upstate New York, there's a lot of natural water reservoirs that are there and will be there a great long time. It's a good, you know, place to kind of go, all right, this is my fallback when and if the worst happens. So yeah, it's complete 180 now. And that cabin they were in, I was thinking about how much it would be glamped, as they say, like glamour camping.
It would have one of those like Sub-Zero refrigerators, the ones that's like all brushed metal. Like you would have that. There would be
clear wine fridge
with some, maybe some sort of like a neon affect that kind of like is like a blue glow on the bottles.
That's right.
Definitely that. Definitely like a rough table that's rougher than what he has now. Like it's a table that's like that he would probably build himself. This is the thing that is interesting about Aiden is like, he is kind of the two guys in one. He is kind of the actual sort of authentic Epcot Carhartt guy or whatever you're saying. Like he is that because he lives in the city. Mm-hmm. He's definitely like, hey, babe, like, hey, but he also, there's some authenticity of that with him as well.
Yeah. I mean, and that, you know, the thing about Aiden is I really believe Aiden. Written Aiden is to not, he's such a soft hearted dude, but he's also handy.
Yeah.
You know, and he's also kind of, you wouldn't necessarily call him kind of it's interesting to go like, and this speaks to the how texturally written the show is. Who's more of a man's man? Is it Mr. Big or is it Aiden?
Totally. Yeah.
You know, or just Big, excuse me. Because Big is like square jawed dude, you know,
big boxy suits.
He's a king of business. He can't build a chair.
No.
Aiden
not at
can
all.
Build a chair. Aiden can fix a pipe, you know. These guys are all the guys on it, Steve, they're all man's men in men's men in their own way, which is really interesting, you know?
Yeah.
Because Steve is super handy. Steve doesn't think anything about cleaning out asbestos with no mask, you know?
Kind of thing. Totally. Steve, I feel like had a lot of summer jobs working drywall, like
yes,
for someone's 100%. Uncle. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He reminds me of those guys that I went to school with who their dads were like these like bricklayers turned contractors that would only hire other guys because it would take too long for them to do it with just their hands, but they could certainly build a house alone.
Yeah.
And which is the most alien concept to me of all time.
Totally. Steve is one of those guys that I think understands carpentry. Like when you realize that carpentry is math and geometry, and it's like, well, when you cut it with this saw, it's going to take out this much of the wood. So you got to account for that when you do your math. Like Steve understands that. He understands angles, but it's all very normal to him. He's just like, yeah, that's what it is. That's how the angle works.
It's math by feel.
Weirdly. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And, you know, I think if they made Aiden or Steve like huge dummies, it would be really lazy writing, but they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not, you know, I mean, Stevie is kind of in his own world and just sees things very simply, but he's not a simple, he's a simple person, but not in the dumb regard, you know, and Aiden is kind of head in the clouds guy, eternal optimist. So he doesn't even see it coming when Carrie leaves him eventually, and he's devastated. But it's kind of, he's also very adept at things.
I always wonder, like, I mean, Aiden eventually, we find out in the second movie that he's married and has kids. But I always kind of wonder, we've never met his wife, and I wonder who was the woman that, like, because he was clearly probably very hurt after, you know, for years after the Carrie thing. And I feel like he probably had a period of like going to bars, hooking up with younger women that were just like, oh my gosh, this hot carpenter. And then I wonder who the woman is that it kind of healed him and he got back in. I feel like she maybe is a little earthy, maybe has some like kind of.
She's a little earthy, and I think she's maybe a little bit more direct. Where Carrie always had, her whole thing was she always had one foot out the door. Where, you know, there's that scene in this episode where she goes out to eat a steak with Big, and he's going to tell her about fucking this other woman, and she stops him. She's like, okay, I made it 30 seconds, you know? Where it's like, that's funny because that's what she all but invited in, you know, where he's like, is it okay that I'm talking about him in this cabin? And he's like, can I tell you about this girl's panties? And she's like, what the fuck? But it's like, that's your scene though. That's what you've built in a way. Where I think with Aiden, he probably did the bar around and probably slutted it up a little bit in Greenwich Village or something. And then he found someone who grows their own weed, but who is very direct and is just like, I feel a connection with you and this is why you're great. I think Aiden needs to be told. He needs someone to be like, hey, you're awesome and here's why. And he's like, you know what? Like he just said, he's always giving. He's always just like, I'm here to provide. I'm here to build. And he just needs someone to, you know, make him a cake and suck his dick. I'm sorry. Very hard. But like, you know, and love him and love him. And so, you know, that's just like what he needs. It's funny. I was just remembering, I was watching the show and going, fuck, I've worked with him. And
wow.
It's kind of like, I've had this wild kind of all over the place bit player life where I was on a show with Kyle MacLachlan. John and I did, I was on the United States of Terra, one of my first jobs. And I wasn't in the scene with her, but I remember being at the table with him and Toni Collette. And like, Toni Collette is she's very sweet, but she's also very like, she's English. She's very proper.
Yeah.
And John is like a hilarious, hey, what's up, everybody? Like kind of a fucking, a fuck around fun dude. He's very sweet, but he was telling me the story of how like of how he tried to break Collette out of her shell, where they're trying to get this takedown and they're so close to being out of there, and John just goes, "Come on, guys, let's wrap it up. This coke ain't gonna snort itself." and Toni Collette is like, "What?" And she looks around like, "Oh my god, you all do cocaine?" And he's like, "No, no one. This is a joke." And she laughed and she got loose and they got the scene. So it's like, I always think of that, of like how that guy's the funnest, you know?
It's really funny because I think that you're maybe the first person that we've had on that has had connection with him. Like we've had Sarah Jessica Parker on the pod. We've had we've had Kristen Davis on. We've talked to all the women in some sort of capacity. And we had on Willie Garson before he passed away. And like, so we've had a lot of connection. And we even Kevin, you know, had a friend who's an actor who'd done some work with the guy that plays Mr. Big, you know, so like we've had connection with that. But I think you're the only person that we've had that's had a direct connection to John Corbett. And it sounds like from what you're saying, which I love, you know how actors sometimes like play themselves a little bit? It sounds like he's got a good bit of Aiden in him.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. There's a reason why he plays those guys like Big Fat Greek Wedding. These dudes who are just incredibly good hearted. Cause he seems like one of those guys. I don't know anything of his life, but he's one of those guys. You have those people you work with and they make you feel so fucking welcome. You know, where he's like, yeah, come sit with me, man. Let's have lunch. And it's like me and Brie Larson and him. And I'm like, whoa. And to not be, you know, I know my role. I'm like, I'm gonna go eat over here, and he's like, no, man, no, come here. You know,
that's crazy.
And yeah, like such a cool dude. And it's funny. I will just share this, not to be like name droppy or whatever. But
yeah, yeah.
The thing, Kyle MacLachlan is also a fucking peach. Like,
gosh, seems like it.
I shot with him for a week, and then he brought in. We're hanging out in somebody's room. I think it was Sabrina Jalice's dressing room. And he brings in a bottle of his own champagne from his vineyard. Here, everybody. And he pours us all a glass and stuff and hanging out. And I've been just losing my mind over him all week. And I never said anything to him. You know, fucking, come on, dude. Twin Peaks, Blue Velvet. Like, forget
amazing.
About it.
Yeah.
And but there's a scene. I play this patient. It was on Carol's second act. I play this patient who has this like spots all over his legs and they can't figure it out. And she figures it out and she redeems herself. And Kyle MacLachlan's one scene, he had like two lines and he just kept flubbing this one line. And Patricia Clarkson just goes like, she just goes, Kyle, come on, you're on Dune. You got this. And he's just like, fuck. Because it's like, you talk about someone who's insanely famous, who's been in all kinds of shit. I forgot he was even on this show.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, you know, I think if I didn't actually start booking roles until close to, you know, until like 2007 or 8 is when I started getting anything. I think if I would have started actually working as an, you know, or getting sporadic acting work in the early 2000s, I would be kind of pissed off if I wasn't in Sex in the City because it's just like Jim Gaffigan's on it. And,
yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying I would deserve it, but it's just like you, when you're starting to get roles, part of you is like, hey, but why not? But I'm like, right. You know,
listen, it's the same. Awesome. We talk about it all the time. Like you go through especially the first couple seasons of this show. And it is, you see the beginnings of like, New York comedy and also just like sort of stand up of how stand up and comedy would become in the next like 10 years. Like there's a random episode where I don't know if you remember in the first two seasons, they would do these sort of like direct cutaways where people would talk to camera. They'd break the fourth wall. And they ended up cutting that from the show eventually. But there's one where Todd Barry's just like a water cooler delivery guy. And he's just like talking about the weird things that he likes about women. And it's like him, Gaffigan. We had Tony Hale on an episode and it was like one of Tony Hale's first big acting gigs. And he's just like a photo assistant, you know? And I absolutely think you would be like, you know, he would be like boyfriend at a party who like they find out is also a cab driver, you know, I'll just take my cab home, you know, whatever.
I would kill to be a terrible boyfriend or it's just a horrible date. Just put me in one scene, you know. I loved how Jim Gaffigan's whole thing was like the guy who, you know, left the door open while he pissed and Miranda's like, takes a dump, he slams the door on him, you know, like, which incredibly, incredibly unacceptable.
Completely. But you're right. It's like, the Kyle MacLachlan thing is nuts because even just looking at his IMDb, it's like, you know, Twin Peaks, all the things, you know, but then also like, you know, one of his first big things, like you said, is Dune and then Blue Velvet and then Twin Peaks. And you're right, Sex and the City is, it's not a footnote by any means, but there's just a litany of so many things. Like, I forgot that he was in Portlandia. He, like, plays the mayor. Yeah,
the mayor.
And it's kind of like a joke where it's like, oh, it's Kyle MacLachlan as the mayor. But it's a lot of stuff.
I don't think he has much ego. You know, he's just like, well, this seems like this would be, like, really interesting. Where... you know, like that Carol second act, part of me was like, what are you doing in the show? And he probably just like, I wanted to do a multicam. I wanted to do a sitcom in front of a live audience and try to make this thing as funny as it could be in my way. And, you know, and he has great timing. He's a funny guy. And like, he probably saw that role and was like, oh, Connecticut mama's boy, let's do it.
Yeah,
like
he's
the one male character in this episode I'm watching. And I'm like, get the fuck off my screen. I don't like that. You know, like,
yeah,
and that's the part he's playing.
It's
like,
yeah,
mother is showing her mother. Oh my, if you're dating a dude and he keeps calling her mother, it's like, that's Mike Pence shit.
I know. Well, I was going to ask you, like, you're married, you have a child, and like the mother and mother-in-law thing, like there is I and the other guys we host this podcast together, like, we're all very close with our parents. We all come from good families. We're lucky to have great parents. And I love my folks, but I also think there is a thing like when you start a family of your own, that there is a barrier where your mother doesn't need to be giving you a bath anymore when you're a surgeon, you know, who's trying to have a child with his wife. Like, he definitely has a lot of, they play into that very well. And you kind of forget how good of an actor he is.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he's great. And of course it's Greenwich. They give him self-awareness where he's like having sex in Greenwich. Well, I guess there's a first time for everything.
Yeah.
It's like, even, you know, it's like that, that old, joke, probably our parents' generation get this far more than we do, but, do you know why wasps don't have orgies? Too many thank you notes. That's like only they would understand, where it's like there is a way things are done.
Yes, totally.
And that is how they are done, and there is no discussion. Do not, Brooks. No, I am your mother. Now you listen. It's like he's like, I'm fucking 45. Shut up, you know.
Yeah.
But he can't. He can't because he's owned by his mom, by his old money Connecticut mom, where they through generations they've never been challenged because they own everything. They own the textile mill. They come from, you know, Plymouth Rock money. So it's like, you know, that's a huge wall to go up against, you know.
Yeah, yeah. We also talk the same way about like how Aiden got over Carrie. We've talked about how they're hopefully, because I do think he is annoying, but I end up finding this like great soft spot for him where we're just like, it's like you're saying, he's a good guy. He's just owned and he's so messed up. And we're like, when his mom died, you hope that he had some sort of life reckoning where someone had to be like, hey, you're a good looking dude. You're a surgeon. You had this great wife that you're not married to anymore. Like, can you get some of this figured out? Like, you've got a lot of mom issues that you got to deal with, you know? Like, but the sad thing is he probably didn't. He probably just inherited a lot of money. And then, like, the mom's sister just kept doing that for the rest of his life. His aunt then became his mom afterward or something.
Right. Or he became like a living martyr to his mother.
Totally.
I did not do enough. I should have done more. This kind of thing where that the trauma of unearned guilt.
Yeah, I feel like he probably held a lot of like high teas with his mom's friends that were still alive afterward. You know, in his mother's honor.
And a lot of that is telling yourself you enjoy a thing you don't enjoy, where it's like, you know, I mean, I love that line in Old School where Matt Walsh is like, all I do on the weekend is play golf. I fucking hate golf, man. He wants to get into the guy's frat for adults, you know, it's like, I wonder, how many of those, I mean, I only reference this because it's pertinent, but that the character or the guy I named my special after, Doug, I'm convinced he had kids because you're supposed to, because him and his wife were, every time I say this is about every time we were on vacation in the Caribbean, and every time I saw Doug, he was drunk and wet. Like somehow he woke up in the froth of the surf, and he was in his 50s, and him and his wife, if you brought up their kids, like we are in a golden era. We have a 2-year-old and she's a lot of fun. And if my wife and I are drunk, we'll be like, oh, she's the fucking best. She drives me nuts. But man, you know, you can tell when you talk to somebody about their kids, if they're really invested, and you talk to Doug and his wife and they'd be like, ugh, fucking boo. You know, it was this, it's that thing where it's like, why did you have them? Because you work in finance and it's what you do because of your family pressure where, you know, it's even Kyle MacLachlan's character in the show. It's like, not that he's Doug, he's not an asshole, but it's like, does he want this kid? Like his wife does, but you don't know. I don't know. I know his mom wants one, and so he's gonna not even consider what he wants.
Totally.
So, and that's not a good reason to bring a living being into existence.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I wanna touch on one other thing before we wrap up, and that's Samantha being the person who. I mean, Carrie is so out of her element out of the city, but I feel like Samantha's possibly even more out of her element out of the city at Suffren, just in her like expense. They're both in expensive clothes, but she seems like she's like wearing heels, tiptoeing through the mud.
Yes.
And then somehow she not only finds Farmer Luke, but like it pulls off an outfit change to go see him.
Yeah. Ridiculous outfit change. She puts on a hat that doesn't go with the dress, the whatever. It's a onesie or something that she has on at all. Doesn't go with a pink thing she's wearing. For some reason, she thinks it's farmy, and she lies to the guy. And she's like, I'd love to move here, you know. But it's like, I mean, Samantha is so fuck crazy that if it was a male character, we'd all be like, I don't like Sam. Like that Sam guy, he needs to go wash his dick and fucking go to a sex addict.
Yeah. So, absolutely.
But it works for Samantha, where it's, you know, it's like Blanche on Golden Girls.
On Golden Girls, yeah, totally. Blanche Devereaux.
I love the line where Blanche is asleep on the couch, and to get her to go to bed, one of the other Golden Girls is like, Blanche, my wife's here. You have to go. And still sleeping, she gets up and leaves the room. Like, she's had that said to her by so many husbands. So, like, it's such a funny comedic trope because it's a woman. But I'm remembering this guy I was in college. No, this wasn't a guy I knew in college. But he's like an Italian dude I was talking to, a New Yorker. And he was talking about how much he likes Sex in the City. And he's like, oh, Samantha, she's such a fucking pig. I love her. I fucking love her.
Oh, gosh.
She's such a pig. But it's like, to him, she is. But it's like, Samantha wouldn't give a fuck what you called her. She's going to live her life. She can do whatever. But it's so outlandish. the way she's just like, I'm gonna go fuck that farmer. Like, it's so crazy, but it's
so
hilarious.
Much. Yeah, and it's great that the thing that they, I mean, granted, they're independent women who are like doing what they want to do, but the fact that a guy that she is enjoying having sex with and spending time with, and is like, do you want to do this again? And she's like, oh, stop talking about that. The fact that she's just like, get away from me.
Yeah.
I'm moving on to the next thing.
I got what I want from you, and now we're done. Yeah. And it's funny. I've known guys who are like, I don't know. We had sex and then she won't return my calls. And it's kind of almost, there's this thing that I've talked to women about where they're like, well, that's what men want. And I'm like, yeah, but no.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it, sure, men are far, far more like that, generally speaking, but it's kind of like, I'm not saying like, I feel bad for any of these male characters or anything. It's so funny that she's just like, ugh, why?
I know.
Can you just climb out a window and not talk to me?
I know. I know, for sure. Especially after having the most like cartoony, like literal roll in the hay.
Yep.
And then to just be like, oh, I got to get out of here. Mm-hmm. I got to. Also, there was no Uber back then. So getting back to the city has got to not be easy.
How'd they get out? And I was thinking about the this when you first see Samantha at the cabin, she's dying. It's so hot. And then she went and fucked in a barn. Like, a barn when it's hot is the hottest place in the goddamn world.
There's it traps no all the heat.
Oh, it's so bad. And all that dry hay all over your bare ass.
You know there's got to be bugs in there. Like gnats. Like gnat kind of bugs.
Oh, that won't stop buzzing around your face.
There's also a thing where she gets shot in the face with the milk.
Right.
And then she wipes it off. But without going to wash your face, like raw milk out of the udder, just sort of wiping it off, it's going to dry on your face. It's going to smell.
It smells fast. It goes back fast. Yeah. Non-pasteurized. Yeah. And she has that line where she's like, I usually get a little bit of a warning before that happens. Like,
totally. Wah, wah. Yeah. Farmer Luke definitely seemed a little, they played this up very much, but there was a thing where Aiden had said, like, he, you know, kind of got done with the city life and came up here. He, to me, felt very dim. Just feels like a guy
he's pretty simple.
Yeah. Definitely played. I mean, it's like totally like the corn-fed farm boy stereotype for sure. Mm-hmm. But very, very much a simple guy. Totally.
Well, and he did make like the backstory made sense, because when he's like, he's definitely very proud of how he lives on that farm now. I'm a farm guy. Whereas a farmer would just farm.
Be like, that's so true.
All my life. You know, when he's like, where he's like, you know, if you went to a farmer, you're like, can I have some milk? He would just go get it. He's not going to make you. He's like, go right ahead. It's literally like, I can do it. Can you? Fucking, they used to live on the Upper West Side, but now I milk cows. You know, he makes her go do it. And then as she's doing it, he's like, you ever milked a cow before? Like, no. A farmer would be like, have you ever milked a cow? I'm asking. You know, like he's lording it over her to a degree. Like, he leans against the ladder, arms crossed, like, look. And it's like, fuck, and now that I think of that, explains why he's wearing no fucking shirt.
we've made it all the way back around to where he is the Epcot
Jethro.
Guy.
He went full Jethro, you know. He probably just boils ground coffee in a pot and drinks it all grainy like an asshole. He's a coffee maker, you know. He's doing shit. He's the guy that goes to farm conventions and annoys the shit out of the other farmers, where they're just like, he's like, you guys use milking machines? I use my hand. You're like, man, my grandpa has arthritis because he didn't have this fucking meat. Would you fuck off with
they're
this?
They're like, I'm just trying to sell my milk.
I'm going to lose my farm because all I have is my farm. You sold shares of a devalued company, and so you own this fucking, we're not the same.
You're driving up the property values out here to where I'm gonna have to just sell to you to save my family's farm, for sure.
Exactly. You sandblasted your brand new F-150, so it looks like mine. Mine's barely holding together. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like he always is chewing on some sort of long thing of hay everywhere he goes just to be doing that, for
He's
sure.
walking around barefoot, injuring his feet. Like, there's so much loose shit in the woods that's hurting him, and he won't show it, but he's like, you know, soaking his feet every night. Every other farmer's wearing boots, and they're just like, you gotta put shoes on, man. Stop.
You got a ton of tetanus right now, for sure. You're lockjawed completely. I feel like we've made a good round thing of the episode. I feel like there's another episode after this one where they continue into Suffren, mm-hmm. and Mr. Big makes a visit to Suffren. But I feel like we've dipped the toes in pretty well and dissected it all, because it's definitely it's such a weird it's I'm glad we talked about it, because it's kind of a weird episode. It's a weird yeah. world of the episode, because it's out of their version of Meatpacking District.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm honest, when I saw the one that I was supposed to watch, I was kind of like, oh man, I want to be in the city, you know? But at the same time, I still enjoyed the episode, revisiting it. And, you know, I liked that she went back in the city to drink red wine and eat red meat with Big, you know, where she got her little fix and then comes back and brings a friend, and her friend fucks the farmer. Like, it's completely ridiculous and based in almost no reality. But that's just for time. These are all based, like you said, on writers' experiences or whatnot. So, but it was fun. It was fun. We didn't really get it too much into Steve's balls, but you know, as Steve put it, you know, himself, it's just like, yeah, they go in there, they take it out, and it's none, you know, like, so there's not a lot to talk about. It's just kind of him and Miranda going at it, where she's trying to get him to care for himself, and he's just being a dude.
Yeah, so which I think you really did nail it. It's like, he definitely has a thing where he's just like, it'll figure itself out. It's not even a bad cancer anymore. Lance Armstrong had it. He's good.
Don't worry yourself. You know, I mean, my parents went on vacation to Portugal a couple weeks ago, and they both got COVID, and they'd never had COVID before, and they didn't tell me. And so as they're coming back, they're like, yeah, we had COVID on the trip. I'm like, the fuck? They were gone for like 3 weeks. And it's like, why don't you? And there's like, well, we didn't want to, you know, it's just, and the thing is, I said to them, look, here's the thing, don't get offended, but I wouldn't have been bothered or worried, because you're both in good health and you're both vaxxed. You know, so I wouldn't be worried. I'd be like, ah, that sucks. Sorry, guys. But they just, yeah. I mean, my parents told me over the pandemic that if they got to the point, this is before we even had a vaccine, if they got to the point where they had to go into a defibrillator, or not a defibrillator, what do you call it? Not an iron lung. Oh my God. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Like the isolation booth or the...
Basically, you're going game show. I'm going heart attack.
I'm like, they get to play Plinko, right?
A respirator.
Intubated with a respirator.
They would refuse it because they're at the age where it wouldn't save them. And my mom told me that over the phone. And I'm just like, I haven't seen them in months. And I'm like, it wrecked me. Because I'm just like, I don't need to hear this right now. But it's like, you know, it's like, you should know. If you don't come to the hospital and fight for it, because we're just gonna die, you know. But they tell me that, but they don't tell me the thing that, like, I wouldn't worry me at all.
Absolutely.
You know, it just shows to show you with regards to the Connecticut mom. It's like, a lot of times the parents don't know best. They're as dumb as we are, and we have to keep that in mind as kids.
Yeah, that's true. And I think the older that you get, you're just like, whatever, I'm just gonna say this, you know. Like, I'm sure I had my parents and I were walking through, there's a cemetery in Brooklyn called Greenwood Cemetery. It's a bunch of famous people are buried there. And it's nice green space in New York, which, you know, when you got good green space, you gotta go walk in it. And as we were talking, they were like, okay, so the plan is, like, when our ashes come through, this is where we want them to go. And I was just like, what? No, just out of the gates, no warning. It's like the Samantha thing, where I'm like, usually I get a little warning when this conversation's happening. But I think you get to the place with parents where they're just like, Here's the deal, Matt. We're not going to get intubated. We're just going.
I'll raise you driving past the cemetery by Central Catholic in Portland, and my parents perking up and going, "That's where we're going." Right, that's where we're, hey, like they were like, it was like finding out the Blazers made the playoffs. Oh shit, we're in. Fucking San Antonio lost. So, you know, it was, they're like, they perked up and they're like, hey, that's going to be us. We're going to live there. And I don't know, if it's probably because of decades of working in the public school system, but, you know, just like, oh man, I'm going to be in a sweet ass grave. So much cushion.
Oh man, velvet lined. It's going to be the best. I'm going to be so dead. Well, Matt, thank you so much.
Thank you, Corey. This is a lot of fun, dude.
Yeah. Where can people, one, keep up with you, and two, check out Doug?
So just go, you can go to at Bronger on Instagram and click the link on that. The link on at Bronger at Twitter. That's BRAUNGER. MattBronger.com for everything else. You can also just Google Matt Bronger Doug and it'll come up. It's on Google Play, it's on Vudu, it's on Amazon Prime. And then it's, if you just want to listen, you can just pull it up on any number of streaming services, all that jazz, if you don't want to pay for the special. But anyway, last thing I'll say is just get out there and support live performance. I won't just say comedy, you know, support people that are doing performing art.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Cool. We'll put a link up to all that stuff. And thanks so much for doing it, man. Thanks for doing the Bradshaw Boys.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks so much, Corey.
Later, taters.
The Bradshaw Boys stars Corey Cabin, Kevin James Doyle, and John Sieber. The show is produced by me, Jeremy Balin, and narrated by Katie Sieber. This podcast is part of the Seltzer Kings Network. Check out all their great podcasts at seltzerkings.com. You can find the boys on their socials at The Bradshaw Boys or on their website at bradshawboys.com. And as always, if you see them in the street, tip your glass. Thanks for listening.